Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by SuperValu Insurance, looking out for you and yours with our new life and mortgage protection insurance.
Now, Corinne Bailey-Ray has had a really interesting career in music. She's coming to Dublin in May. She's playing Glastonbury this summer. She has two Grammys. President Obama was a big fan, and she played the White House. And she gave us this great song. Corinne Bailey-Ray, good morning to you.
Good morning, how are you?
Great, thanks so much for joining us. That song, Put Your Records On, how much did it change your life?
It really changed my life. You know, I went from being a musician who played in bands and, you know, had my own indie band, Helen, for years. But then I started to want to be a solo artist and recorded lots of songs. But I had Like a Star, which was my calling card, but this song really changed everything for me. You know, it's so hard to get heard as a musician. And to have this song that people were excited about, that they wanted to put on the radio, that they wanted to have me on later with Jules Holland and all these great TV shows, you know, Like a Star and Put Your Records On together, they just kind of smashed down all these doors for me all over the world. So, you know, it was amazing.
Tell me, you grew up in Leeds. Tell me about your mom and dad. I was reading Barry Egan in this morning's Sunday Independent. He was saying how close you are to mom and how much you love your mother.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I really love my mom. I get on so well with her. We have so many things in common. And she was the sort of hero of our family to me and my two sisters. There's three girls, and we grew up in Leeds. You know, our parents got divorced when we were teenagers, but we're really close to our dad as well. He's from St. Kitts in the Caribbean, and my parents got on well enough. It was a kind of good enough divorce, I guess, where they got on well. So we're always able to be in and out of these two cultural worlds. You know, we've been able to be at my nana's and go to the carnival and have our rice and peas and be around our Caribbean relatives, and then be at my mum's side of the family that are all sort of from Yorkshire and have fish and chips and hear about and go to bingo. And so I really love Leeds for this mixture of cultures.
You sang in church when you were young. Was that the start of your musical career?
I really liked music as a child, and I played violin when I was little, and then I got into guitar because my little sister was learning it. But yeah, church was a really great space for us to be able to experiment with music, and we had this youth leader who was really into bands, all sorts of bands. You know, he kind of grew up as a goth in the 80s, and he was in a band himself. And so the music we listened to at church was Bjork and, you know, Radiohead and Lenny Kravitz and all of these different styles of music. So we brought our music from home into church, and he would just say, you know, why don't you just make up your own songs? You know, all of this religious music was just a bunch of people making up their songs in their style of the day. So he had a really sort of irreverent approach to music, and I started a band, and as a teenager he bought me my first guitar because I couldn't afford it, and always really encouraged me and my friends to just do our own thing.
You clearly had loads of talent, Corinne, and ambition, but was it unusual for a young black girl to be playing a violin at that time?
I mean, I think the doors were always open for me, which was brilliant. In the orchestras, it was just that I was the only one. But the doors were very much open. I mean, I got to lead the orchestra at Leeds. It was all the local schools coming together for this big celebration every May. And I felt very supported. It was just that there was no one else around that looked like me. It was always just me and my two sisters. But I enjoyed and still enjoy confounding people's expectations. You know, I loved being, you know, one of the few sort of black kids in the indie kid scene in Leeds. You know, it'd always be just me, you know, at these clubs, or, you know, me walking in with my Marshall amp and my guitar. And, you know, even just being three girls in a band in those days, it was a really big deal. You know, people be looking around thinking we were carrying our boyfriend's instruments. You know, it was really a different time in the 90s. I think there's so much more space for people to be who they are nowadays.
You, of course, recently did your album Black Rainbows, and I know you found inspiration for that in Chicago and how black stories are told. You were thinking about art and activism. So do you see yourself now, older and wiser, as an activist or as someone who bears witness?
I really see myself as a musician, and I think I just go to the things that interest me. And seeing this building, you know, Stony Island Arts Bank in Chicago, and being able to look through these 26,000 books that were submitted to the Johnson Publishing Company, who made Ebony Magazine and Jet Magazine. So to be in an amazing library, to be around that grandeur and elegance, but have all the books be on these different black subjects, that was the rare thing for me. You know, I felt like I found so many answers to questions that I'd had and perhaps been told, oh, there isn't information about that, or, oh, that's hard to find, or, oh, you talk about oral culture, so the stories were carried from mouth to mouth to mouth to ear, but they weren't written down. And but actually to be there and find, you know, someone really did spend a few years of their life writing about the black families that moved to Oklahoma in the 1850s, you know, these really specific moments in history, and find all these PhDs that have been written by black students from the 1940s onwards. It was really eye-opening. But I still see myself as a musician rather than specifically an activist. You know, the record isn't kind of banging people over the head with history. It's more unlocking and engaging with personal stories that I think everybody can relate to.
I know into most lives, some form of grief or sadness comes. You didn't escape. You were only 29 when your first husband, Jason Ray, died. He was only 31. I know he died of an accidental overdose. How did you deal with that at the time? And what did that immense grief do to you?
I mean, I think anyone who's lost a partner will be able to understand it's such a huge life change. You know, you go to bed on one night lying next to somebody, and the next night they're not there, and the night after that, and the night after that, and the night after that. So in terms of my everyday life, it changed so dramatically, so quickly. And, you know, losing someone so young, mm-hmm. and in those circumstances as well, where, you know, lots of people experiment with, I don't know, drugs and alcohol when they're that age. And, you know, he drank something that he shouldn't have drank. It was a friend of his, methadone, and, you know, he went to sleep and he didn't wake up. You know, I think it was endlessly tragic. I think when you lose someone, you go through all the different emotions. You know, I was angry that it had happened. I couldn't believe that it had happened. I was wanting to somehow change it. I kept revisiting the day. What could I have done differently? How, you know, it was really difficult. I felt at the time that it was the end of my life, you know, and I was only 29, but I thought, well, I've had this really good life. I've had this good childhood, and, you know, I've got to do all this stuff with my music. You know, me and Jason had been sort of traveling all around the world with my first record. And then he'd gone to play onto both Mark Ronson and done all those great gigs with Amy and Adele. And so I just thought, this is kind of the end. And it was just very, very, very slowly, almost resurfacing, or sort of, you know, coming back to life, or having the volume turn back up. There was a lot of very quiet, very slow times, but I was so lucky to have, you know, really good family, really good friends, just kind of waiting for a certain amount of time to pass. And I'm still really close to Jason's family, and I'm still can easily be brought back into, you know, the weight of that pain. But, you know, it's very much moved from feeling the sadness of myself having lost a husband, and it's moved into just, you know, feeling sadness for him, all the things he has missed, you know, all the time that's gone past. And it's just it's really easy to lose your life through kind of playing around with substances, because they're not really that well controlled, and you don't know what they're going to do to your body. So I'm not a sort of like big drugs person, because I just think you just don't really know what's going to happen. But I mean, I totally understand why people try out things, but it's not that unusual for something to go really, really wrong, you know.
And I'm conscious of anyone listening this morning, Corinne, who's maybe going through a profound loss like that. I mean, was it just the support of your family, or how do you think in the end you did recover from the grief? Is it just time? Or I'm getting back to recording, performing and working. Did that help?
I think getting back to performing I think it meant that I felt like I was being myself, and I realized, oh, I still got this. I still got sort of standing on the stage. And even though half the time I was standing on the stage, I was singing about this loss in one way or another. I felt like, oh, well, here I am. I'm being honest. I'm sort of being connected in that I'm using my body and my mind and my spirit in this moment. And I had all my band was my really dear friends, you know, for that tour. So that definitely helped. But I think, yeah, for anyone who is going through a profound grief, the only thing you can say is the way you feel now is not the same as the way you'll feel in a year's time or the way you'll feel in 2 years' time. And, you know, I think it's almost as though your life gets bigger. At the beginning, you're sort of living around the edge of this huge sinkhole, you know, and you think, I'm just going to fall in. There's no other life here. There's only this loss. As time goes on, you know, you just get a little bit more kind of around the perimeter, and the pain feels impossible right now, and it won't feel the same in a year's time or even 2 years' time.
Was it important for you, Corinne, to keep Jason's surname Ray? I know your own name is Corinne Bailey, but was it important for you to keep the Ray part?
Yeah, it was important for two reasons. I mean, one was I felt like I didn't want to erase the history of my relationship with Jason. You know, it's like we got together when we were really young. We didn't have children, you know, so if I change my surname, then in a few years' time, it's almost as though, you know, where is he? Where's his kind of legacy? I wanted to feel like I'm folding him with me. You know, I want to feel like his my achievements and his achievements kind of carry on. He was a really big influence on me. He was a saxophone player. He was an amazing musician. You know, his record collection was vast, and he was really, really brilliant and really free, and he was really funny and beautiful. And so I wanted to keep his name in my name, but also that had been it become my professional name as well. You know, so I thought, you know, I've done all this work in the world to make this name, and I don't want to erase that either. So, I mean, yeah, I'm lucky. My husband is pretty chill, and he gets me, but he doesn't get to add his name onto mine. I think he doesn't really mind about that. So, yeah.
No, the lovely thing is you are remarried. You have your two girls, your husband, Steve Brown. He's also your producer. How does that work out?
Yeah, we work together. We produce together. I had known him from before we had a relationship. So I always had this big music relationship with him sort of before we got together, you know. So when I wanted to carry on, you know, when I wanted to finish the C, I was already working with Steve and I wanted to carry on. And then when we did the Heart Speaks and Whispers, he was just my first choice. I have not trained as a producer, and I'm coming to it, you know, as I go along. I'm learning all the different, you know, digital platforms, but I've always arranged music. I did that in my band, you know, what's the bass doing, what's the guitar doing, what the backing vocals doing, what's the structure of the song. And so that's a natural part of production, and it's been an extension. So it is really good to work together. We've always worked together. Of course, it is kind of all your eggs in one basket, you know, but our most heated conversations are actually about music, you know. It's like we do get on really well, and we still, I think it just helps to have a deep relationship with the person you're working with on music. It's too easy for me to kind of feel a certain way but not say it, whereas when I'm with him, we just keep sort of pursuing it till we're both happy.
When you played Glastonbury this summer, will you play the crowd pleasers? I mean, do you still enjoy singing Put Your Records On?
I love singing that song, and it's such a tricky song to sing, you know. I'm not a trained songwriter, so I just kind of poured it out, and for anyone who's ever tried to cover it, there's hardly any room to breathe in that song, you know. It's really conversational, so it's just like it keeps going and it keeps going and it keeps going, and then you've got to pause a tiny breath, and then you have to go for a big note. And so it's a real it's a puzzle for me, that song, of how to get it right even after all these years. And I do love it. I really want to connect with people. You know, I want to see smiles on people's faces in the audience. I don't just have my agenda of like, this is my art and I want to just, you know, fling it out to you. Like, I really want to connect.
Well, it's lovely to speak to you this morning, Corinne. And of course, you're going to be coming to Dublin for Rock Against Homelessness, which is in aid of Focus Ireland here in Dublin at the Olympia on May the 26th. Tickets from 3olympia.ie. We're going to play out on your song, Put Your Records On. Corinne, thanks so much for being my guest this morning.
Thank you. Nice to talk to you.
Lovely to talk to you. And just to say, if any of our listeners have been affected by anything in our conversation about grief, you can always, of course, get information on rt.ie/helplines.
Three little birds sat on my window, and they told me I don't need to worry. Summer came.